So unless these groups speak out, the religious groups don't speak out. There's a reason why they're not speaking out, because a minority of their membership are fervid Trump supporters, and they don't want to have that kind of internal turmoil. I was told that by the head of the National Council of Churches a few years ago.
We have five seconds, Ralph.
Well, 5 seconds, I want people to get the Capitol Hill Citizen for a donation of $5 or more to CapitolHillCitizen.com. They can get a 40-page in-print
only newspaper.
We're going to
have to leave it there, CapitolHillCitizen.com. Ralph Nader, former presidential candidate. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KBOO's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kboo.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, triple-digit temps continue in the Portland metro area, with excessive heat warnings lasting through Wednesday evening. Trump and co-conspirators are indicted in Georgia on racketeering charges. And in national news, a new study finds college merit scholarships rarely benefit the neediest students. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, August 15th, 2023. I'm Eric Leuschner. An excessive heat state of emergency is still in place in Portland and Multnomah County through Wednesday night, at least. The state of emergency was declared Sunday when forecasters predicted record-setting temperatures across Oregon. Weather models suggest areas from Salem to Eugene could reach 108 to 110 degrees. Several cooling centers are open in the Portland metro area, welcoming pets and people with food and water from 1 to 8 p.m. Later in the week, Oregon is expected to receive some relief from the heat, with cooler evening temperatures bringing on some much-needed relief. Dr. Teresa Everson, the Multnomah County Health Officer, made recommendations as to how to avoid heat-related symptoms such as heat exhaustion and heat stroke. She said, quote, "We advise folks to drink more water than usual and avoid strenuous sports or outdoor work during the hottest part of the day." Across the metro area, people can find relief at their local public libraries and community centers during the day. In Multnomah County, 3 daytime cooling centers are open today until 8 p.m. They are Multnomah County East and Cook Plaza in Gresham and the Old Town Cooling Center in Portland. The Lloyd Center Mall will also serve as a cooling space until 7 p.m. No one will be turned away from the cooling centers, and pets are welcome. TriMet will transport anyone going to or from a cooling center for free, and anyone needing additional transportation help is advised to call 211 for help. For those looking to local lakes and rivers to cool off, there are still toxic algae blooms in the Willamette River in Portland and off Sauvie Island. Specific cooling center locations, hours, and stipulations can be found at each of the Metro County respective websites. A grand jury in Georgia has indicted former President Donald Trump and 18 other co-conspirators connected to attempts to overturn the 2020 election. Unlike the federal indictment from the Justice Department earlier this month, it charges Trump under state law. It's significant because if Trump were to be reelected as president, he couldn't pardon himself for state-level charges. The 41 counts in the Georgia indictment are under the Georgia Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO. The RICO Act both at the state and federal level, are often used against organized crime, like the mafia, and street gangs. The charges list so-called overt threats that on their own aren't necessarily a crime, but taken together further a conspiracy to break the law. Racketeering charges can bring steeper penalties, which could be a point of leverage for prosecutors hoping to flip co-defendants. The indictment lays out texts, phone calls, meetings, and more taken on by Trump and his co-conspirators to change the election in his favor in Georgia and elsewhere. It includes forgery, witness intimidation, perjury, impersonating officials by people who claimed to be electors, and a scheme to tamper with voting machines in Coffee County, among other things. High-profile names along with Trump's include his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, his former lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, Jenna Ellis, and Sidney Powell. 30 other co-conspirators were included in the investigation, but weren't indicted. Trump has until August 25th to voluntarily surrender. Typically, a defendant will surrender and be processed at the Fulton County Jail, but it's not clear if Trump will do so or when his first court appearance will be. A grand jury in Atlanta heard testimony on whether former President Trump and allies meddled in the 2020 elections in Georgia. Opponents of Alabama's legislative map say it discriminates against black voters. And a Montana judge sides with young environmental activists in a landmark climate decision. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
This was a top-down effort to not only interfere and tamper with Georgia voting databases, but really skew the election and support democracy.
Brianna Tucker of The Washington Post says a potential fourth indictment of former President Donald Trump in Georgia may be the most damaging. Prosecutors investigating whether Trump and his allies meddled in the 2020 election in Georgia began presenting their case to a grand jury on Monday. Reuters reports a list of criminal charges, including state racketeering counts, briefly appeared on the Fulton County website, but was quickly removed. The case was prompted by a recorded phone call Trump made to Georgia's Secretary of State in January of 2021. Suggesting he could help Trump find votes. Alabama's redrawn congressional map was the focus of a federal court hearing Monday. State Senator Vivian Davis Figures says the map still discriminates against black voters.
They don't give all of Alabama's citizens a seat at the table for their voices to be heard.
Alabama was forced to draw a new map after the Supreme Court upheld an earlier ruling, which determined the state likely violated the Federal Voting Rights Act by including only one black majority district. A Montana judge has sided with 16 young environmental activists who said state agencies were violating their constitutional right to a clean and healthful environment by promoting the use of fossil fuels. The activists presented evidence that climate change harms young people's physical and mental health. College student Cyril Sandoval testified it impacted her tribal identity.
You know, it's really scary seeing what you care for disappear right in front of your eyes.
The win is expected to reshape climate litigation across the country. More than 30 news outlets and press freedom groups have condemned a police raid on a small-town Kansas newspaper in which they seized staff computers and personal cell phones. The search came after a local restaurant owner accused the paper of breaking the law in reporting on her previous DUI conviction. Newspaper publisher Eric Meyer tells the Associated Press he believes coverage of local politics is the reason.
This is the type of stuff that, you know, Vladimir Putin does, that third world dictators do.
Media groups say details of the search warrant do not justify what they call a sweeping infringement against the paper. The group No Labels says it has now won ballot access in 10 states after North Carolina election officials formally voted to recognize it. No Labels says it could offer a bipartisan presidential ticket in 2024 as an alternative to the major party nominees. And a grassroots effort to stop the construction of Atlanta's controversial public safety training center, dubbed Cop City, has already gathered the more than 70,000 signatures needed to force a referendum on the November ballot. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Facebook's parent company Meta is challenging the constitutionality of Washington State's campaign finance disclosure law. Campaign finance oversight groups are weighing in on the side of the state's law. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Campaign finance watchdogs are standing up in favor of Washington's disclosure law in court. Facebook parent company Meta has challenged the constitutionality of the state's disclosure law, which requires ad sellers to keep records of how much buyers paid and who the ad targeted. Meta has called the law burdensome on free speech and nearly impossible to comply with. Tara Malloy with Campaign Legal Center says her organization and other election oversight groups have filed a brief weighing in favor of Washington's disclosure law.
To discuss the huge public interest in electoral disclosure laws like Washington and to outline the many challenges that the move to online political advertising has begun to pose for democratic discourse and winning in elections.
In 2022, Washington State filed a $25 million penalty against Meta for more than 800 violations of the campaign transparency law. The law has been on the state's books since 1972. Meta did not respond to a request for comment. While Meta has argued the law is burdensome, Malloy says there's evidence that may not be the case.
The state trial court took a look at the record and said, actually, you know, Meta collects all this information that it claims is so voluminous and burdensome anyway in the ordinary course of its business. It just doesn't want to turn over the information.
Malloy says the campaign disclosure law shines a light on the basic information voters need to cast a meaningful ballot, and that it can be very hard to assess an ad when it's coming from an anonymous source.
Time after time, you see that if voters know who is funding the ad, if they know that the NRA is funding the ad, as opposed to the Environmental Protection Fund, they are very, very able to better assess the credibility and biases of the speaker of the advertising.
Meta's challenge to the law is currently before a Washington State appeals court. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A new report on California's End of Life Option Act finds that the use of medical aid in dying rose 47% in 2022. That's after the law was amended to shorten the time period required between oral requests for the medication. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
A law shortening the waiting period for medical aid in dying has led to a 47% jump in prescriptions for the medication, according to a new report from the California Department of Public Health. In 2021, lawmakers amended the End of Life Option Act to cut the mandatory waiting period between the two required oral requests for the medication from 15 days down to 48 hours. Samantha Tradd with the group Compassion and Choices says the change provided relief to hundreds more patients.
In 2021, 863 prescriptions were written. Last year, with the new changes in effect, 1,270 prescriptions were written.
The data also showed that almost 4 out of 5 terminally ill patients waited less than 15 days between the two verbal requests. A 2018 study from Kaiser showed that 21% of patients who requested to use the End of Life Option Act died during the 15-day waiting period. Dr. Shandana Banerjee with the City of Hope in Duarte notes that some terminally ill patients deteriorate quickly, which can make the 15-day waiting period untenable.
In those 15 days, they can lose consciousness, they can lose the ability to swallow, and at that point, they don't become eligible anymore to participate in the End of Life Option Act because you have to have the ability to ingest on your own.
Some hospitals do not offer the full range of end-of-life care options, citing religious objections. Advocates are calling on healthcare systems and hospices to follow the law and post their medical aid in dying policies on their websites. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with President and CEO of the Urban League of Portland, Nkenge Harmon Johnson. We'll be discussing housing and homelessness, bridging the urban-rural divide, and an upcoming event debriefing the 2023 Oregon legislative session. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be warm with an excessive heat warning and poor air quality warning lasting through Wednesday. The low will be 71 degrees. Tomorrow's weather continues to be very hot, with a daytime high of 99 degrees. Today in history, in 1960, the Republic of the Congo became independent from France. The quote of the day is from American civil rights leader Julian Bond, who died this day in 2015. He was known for helping to establish the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the Southern Poverty Law Center. He said, quote, "Many are attracted to social service. The rewards are immediate, the gratification quick, but if we have social justice, we won't need social service," end quote. Indigenous people in Winnipeg set up two camps to draw attention to missing and murdered Indigenous people and keep the pressure on elected officials. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous people in Winnipeg are continuing to raise concerns and call on officials to search landfills for their missing and murdered relatives. Among the Indigenous women they want found and brought home are Morgan Harris, 39, and Mercedes Myron, 26. Police believe the women are victims of an alleged serial killer and that the remains could be in a landfill. Two camps have been set up in efforts to keep pressure on officials and draw awareness to missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, Two-Spirit, and gender-diverse people.
So there's Cat Morgan and Cat Mercedes.
On an August morning, firekeeper Shining Gold Star, who lives in Winnipeg, talks about Camp Mercedes, named after Mercedes Myron. He's been there since it was first set up in July in the city next to the Canadian Museum for Human Rights.
It's to honor the missing and murdered, especially in the landfill. Its focus is on search the landfill.
Gold Star walks around the camp where there are a handful of tents and a camp kitchen. Signs are posted all around. Some read, "We are not garbage. Search the landfills and no more stolen sisters." There are red handprints and art drawn on sidewalks and benches along walking paths near a river and park. There are also a number of empty red dresses displayed, symbolizing those who've gone missing and murdered.
The government does not want to look because not only is there in there, but there's other people in there. They don't want to, they're going to have to explain things. I've had people come up to me with shovels from every community, black, white, and blue, and they all said the same thing. We'll do it.
A more than 30-minute drive from Camp Mercedes is the city-operated Brady Landfill, where distress flags fly at Camp Morgan, named after Morgan Harris. There are also red dresses positioned around the camp, tents, a wigwam, and teepees. Some people say they've been there since December, while others, like Ida Manuel from British Columbia, felt compelled to come here this summer.
My heart going out to the families affected and just had to answer that call.
Remains of Rebecca Cantois, 24, another victim, were found at Brady last year. A blockade at the road leading up to the landfill had previously been set up, but was dismantled. Now, dumping continues.
For us to have to stand and say, you know, we are not trash, and still not be heard, you know, it really needs to be connected. Canada's lack of respect with what colonialism set out to do to Indigenous.
The other landfill, Prairie Green, is privately operated outside of Winnipeg. The Manitoba government is citing costs and health and safety concerns for not conducting a search at Prairie Green for Harris and Myron. Advocates say they're prepared to camp through the winter. They're also hoping new leadership of the province will be elected in October to offer assistance. Last year, Jeremy Sabicki, 35 at the time, was charged for the murder of the three women and a fourth unidentified woman. Native Hawaiian organizations are accepting donations to help those being impacted by devastating wildfires on Maui. The Council for Native Hawaiian Advancement says last week it partnered with another organization on a fundraising drive. They started with $100,000 in matching funds, which has since grown to more than $1.5 million. The Native Hawaiian community is not only losing possessions, but also historic and cultural sites have been destroyed. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
In order to increase enrollment, colleges are handing out discounts to students who may not need the money. It's a process that favors wealthier, often white and Asian students, according to a new analysis in the Hechinger Report. Suzanne Potter has the story.
A new analysis of college enrollment data in the Hechinger Report shows that people are paying vastly different amounts for the same education because of tuition discounts masquerading as merit aid or scholarships. The data show that much of the so-called merit-based aid goes to wealthier students who are often Asian or white. Robert Massa is an expert in college admissions at USC and former dean of admissions at Johns Hopkins University. He says the name Merit Scholarship is a bit misleading.
I say so-called merit program because it's really not merit and really not rewarding students for the great job they've done in high school as much as they are trying to influence your enrollment decision away from one institution to another.
Data released in July from the Department of Education shows that tuition discounts have been escalating in recent years and can be worth up to $30,000 off the sticker price. At private nonprofit four-year institutions, 62% of Asian students, 59% of white students, 53% of Hispanic students, and 51% of black students received institutional aid. Massa says lower-income students, who often come from communities of color, receive fewer tuition discount offers and are offered need-based aid instead.
One of the ways that colleges and universities justify providing scholarships to students who have low or no financial need is that their net revenue from those students will help to pay for students who do not have the resources.
At private nonprofit schools, 57% of undergraduates received institutional aid in the 2019 school year. Ultra-competitive schools don't need to offer enrollment incentives. At public four-year schools, more than a third of all undergraduate students received institutional aid in 2019, an average discount of $5,200. This story was produced with original reporting by Jill Barshe for the Hechinger Report. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
New methane rules are expected soon from the Environmental Protection Agency. They will have the biggest impact in oil and gas-producing states, such as Texas, which does not have broad, independent methane regulations. At the same time, a new poll found more than two-thirds of Texas voters support the EPA updating regulations to limit methane emissions. Roz Brown has more.
As conservationists await finalization of revised rules governing methane on public lands, a new survey shows a majority of Texans support stronger limits. The poll by four environmental groups, including the Sierra Club, queried Texas voters about the Environmental Protection Agency's supplemental rules proposed in 2022 to limit methane emissions driven by oil and gas projects. Some Texas officials argue the methane regulations will kill jobs, but Cyrus Reed with the Sierra Club's Lone Star chapter says 72% of the 600 registered voters polled believe otherwise.
Voters do care. They care about air quality. They care about climate change. And a majority of them actually think regulations will lead to more job growth than any job loss that potentially could occur in the oil and gas field.
Rule finalization is expected ahead of November's United Nations Climate Change Conference in Dubai. The EPA took hundreds of comments from people across the country earlier this year about its proposed methane rules, hearing from callers in leading oil and gas producing states such as Texas, New Mexico, and Pennsylvania. Revised regulations are central to the EPA's strategy under President Joe Biden to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Reed notes that Texas, the largest oil-producing state in the nation, does not have broad, independent methane regulations outside of those imposed by the federal government.
It's also important for Texans to know that because we haven't had political leadership on these issues in Texas, we're really counting on the EPA to go forward with a regulation that not only covers new wells, but covers existing wells where we have a lot of the problem.
The EPA's methane regulations would reduce emissions 87% below 2005 levels by 2030. Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, El Paso, and San Antonio made the top 25 most polluted U.S. metro areas in the 2023 State of the Air Report by the American Lung Association. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
A new study published last Tuesday said crocodiles are attracted by the sounds of crying babies, likely for predatory reasons. Grant Button has more.
Nile crocodiles recognize and react to the sound of crying babies. That's according to a report published last Tuesday in Proceedings of the Royal Society B, Biological Sciences. The report adds to the theory that nature calls and calls for distress are so universal that they can be understood by other species, regardless of how closely related they are. The study used recordings of a human baby and two different ape species whales played over a speaker. researchers discovered that Nile crocodiles were quite responsive to them. In fact, the crocodiles not only paid attention, but also reacted quickly to the sounds when they heard infants in trouble. Some crocs investigated the speakers from land, while others approached from the water in a predatory way, with some trying to bite the speakers. The exact reason as to why the crocodiles reacted is not certain. Elodie F. Briefer, a behavioral ecologist at the University of Copenhagen, who is not involved with the research, explained two possibilities as to why the crocodiles behaved like they did. She said that it, quote, might be a predatory response to a prey in distress, or it could be because the sound resembles a bit what their own offspring are doing, end quote. The authors of the study explained why the predatory response was most likely. They wrote, quote, the Nile crocodile was indeed an abundant species in the African cradle where the human lineage developed. Since the cries of babies of all species forming the human lineage probably shared acoustic characteristics with the cries of present-day human babies, they probably always represented attractive stimuli for crocodiles, end quote. Charles Darwin himself hypothesized that the ways different species call out in distress might have very ancient evolutionary roots, dating back to the earliest terrestrial vertebrates. This is because natural selection could promote those vocalizations that were effective even among very different species. This study furthered Darwin's hypothesis. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
It's the third week of a military coup in Niger, following in the footsteps of other nearby countries like Mali and Burkina Faso. The coup leaders seem eager for Russian support, though Niger has been a particularly important U.S. collaborator on counterterrorism in the region. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
The human and political tragedy in the West African nation of Niger continues to unfold as the military coup enters its third week. This was the seventh coup in the region since 2020. The democratically elected president, Mohamed Bazoum, is under house arrest, and opposition politicians have also been arrested. In recent years, coups have also occurred in Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Chad, and Sudan. Niger is particularly important for the U.S. as a military partner in counterterrorism activities, mainly directed at Islamic militants. The U.S. operates a drone base there and deploys over 1,000 troops in Niger. Former French colony, Niger is the world's leading exporter of uranium, with the French nuclear industry a main customer. France has 1,500 troops in Niger. They will no doubt be invited to leave. This coup did not pass without a major reaction in the region. The African Union condemned the coup, and the West African Economic Bloc, ECOWAS, demanded that the president be reinstated and threatened military intervention in 1 week if the junta did not step down. As for the U.S., the State Department has called for democracy to be restored, but has chosen not to call the coup a coup so as to leave open a legal avenue for continuing military cooperation with the new regime. Contradictory position? It would seem so. The coup leadership's political leanings were initially unclear, but now it appears that, like Mali and Burkina Faso, Niger's military seems anxious for Russian support. Coup politics in Africa has become a Russian specialty, and it may only be a matter of time before Russia's Wagner mercenary group, which commands roughly 1,000 soldiers in the region, starts working to prop up the new government. There are two reasons for this speculation. First, Yevgeny Prigozhin, Wagner's leader, whose mutiny turned Moscow upside down, has hailed the Niger coup for overthrowing colonialism, and he has offered his troops to help reestablish order. That leads to the second reason. A Niger general reportedly visited Mali to ask the Wagner group to intervene against a possible ECOWAS intervention, which to Nigerians may look like a colonialist operation. The one-week deadline given by ECOWAS was allowed to pass without military action. Cooler heads, particularly in Nigeria, called for seeking a peaceful resolution. Mali and Burkina Faso, both run by juntas, have said an intervention in Niger would be a declaration of war against them, too. Those two countries kicked French forces out following their coups, their leaders arguing that France had extracted resources and used its military presence to interfere in their politics. Anti-French feelings run high there and in other parts of sub-Saharan Africa. Perhaps it's not accidental that three-quarters of the coups that have taken place in that region since 1990 have been in once French colonies. An ECOWAS intervention risks looking like a neo-colonialist attempt to restore French influence. In hopes of prevailing upon the coup leadership to return to constitutional rule, a senior U.S. State Department official flew to Niger and met with some junta leaders, but she could not meet with the general who proclaims himself the head of state. The U.S. official said she was seeking a negotiated arrangement, but allowed that the junta leaders, quote, are quite firm in their view of how they want to proceed. If the junta does not comply, she said, they may push us to the point of declaring the coup a coup, which presumably would mean an end to U.S. military and economic aid and the U.S. presence. She also warned the junta about bringing the Wagner Group into the country, pointing to the risks to their sovereignty. So far, the junta has been unwavering. It has rejected meeting with UN and West African groups, and it has threatened to kill the imprisoned former president if an outside force intervenes against the junta. That has not stopped ECOWAS from putting a standby force in place in hopes, presumably, of forcing the junta to step down. The great tragedy here is twofold. First, military rule is snuffing out democratic options throughout West Africa. Niger's overthrown government was the country's first experiment with democracy. The generals who rule now don't show any sign of interest in that experiment. Second, the great needs in West Africa are finding the resources to address poverty, illiteracy, and desertification south of the Sahara. In Niger, food security is rising, ECOWAS has imposed sanctions on economic aid and travel, and Nigeria has slowed delivery of electricity. The junta's alignment with Russia will not help solve those problems. To the contrary, if the Wagner Group has the kind of influence with Niger's coup regime that it has with others, expect repression of human rights and abuse of government resources to keep the military in power. Nor is an ECOWAS military intervention likely to help ordinary people caught up in the power play. As so often happens when a government is violently overthrown, ordinary people suffer most as the quality of life drops dramatically. I'm Mel Gertov for the Global Citizen.